Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Buckle up, Dunker Nation, let's ride.
This is the most shameless thing you've ever done on this podcast.
Let's ride.
You actually brought that to the podcast. No.
I mean, I was going to do Let's Jump, but I don't think people would get it. So I'll just stick with Let's Ride. We'll work it out. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, we will certainly do that. Anyway, NBA basketball is in full swing. We have some opening week takeaways for you. We are back. We are amped. This has been a lot of fun. And there's been some confusing stuff already to kick off the season. We're going to dig into it. Before we get into the NBA side, we do have some WNBA news to go over. Kurt Miller, formerly head coach of the Connecticut Sun, just led them to the WNBA finals before they bowed out to the Las Vegas Aces in four games. He is no longer coaching the Connecticut Sun. Instead, he has been hired away by the Los Angeles Sparks to take over the head coaching job, not the head coach and GM job like he held in Connecticut. Seems to be just the head coaching job. Steve, what was your initial reaction to the news breaking?
I was a little surprised. Kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. It was a little jarring to see him leave Connecticut, especially with everything that he's done there. Obviously, the Sparks needed to find the gap, and they want to move forward in the next direction. And I thought Kurt Miller's quote about saying he's a builder told me a lot. Coaches like challenges. Coaches like being able to put their prints on a team. Coaches like being able to mold a team and their vision. And having been an assistant in L.A. before, you know, to get the opportunity to go back as a head coach, that goes under the radar sometimes for people. So I totally get that. And honestly, this is no shade to the Sun. They just went to the championship. But there was a last ride element to that season. There's an undercurrent there. And I'm just not sure how much further they could have gone together. So I can't shake that feeling. You make the playoffs six times in a row, or you go to the finals twice. What else can we do here? It's a tough spot. Mm-hmm. Are you going to shake up? Are you going to be part of the next part? Like that challenge or the challenge of building in LA, you probably see how it evens up.
Mm-hmm. And like, we don't have the terms, but I would imagine that would also play a part in that as well. To your point about Connecticut having the last right element, just looking at their roster and their salary sheet, like Breonna Jones, all-star sixth player of the year, she's hitting the unrestricted free agency market. And the Sun have a lot of money tied up in Alyssa Thomas, in Courtney Williams, in DeWanna Bonner. Like there isn't, basically they would have to get very creative to make like significant additions to the roster in terms of free agency. So I can understand saying like, okay, this is the push that we are making this year. Like we've talked about it throughout the WNBA season, like what the vibes were with the Sun for significant portions of the season. And trying to work through their own issues, getting in their own way sometimes on offense and finally pushing through and making it to the finals again. It did kind of feel like, okay, well, if it doesn't happen now, like not to say the Sun will never win or anything like that, but with this particular group, this might be it. And now with Kurt Miller going, like I would imagine, like, I don't know where Breonna Jones is going, but I would be surprised if Breonna Jones is back in Connecticut. And to your point about Kurt Miller wanting to kind of mold a team in his image, he definitely has the opportunity to do that with the Sparks, who have dealt with quite a bit of turnover over the last couple of seasons, both with the actual roster and just their front office. And so he gets to walk into this situation. And the Sparks have lots of players to answer about in terms of free agency. Both the Ogunbowales are up. Brittany Sykes is up. Jordan Canada's up. Christy Tolliver, if she wants to come back, she's also up. There could be a lot of molding here this offseason with the Sparks. And for the Sparks to kind of set up this offseason, you bring in a championship caliber coach in Kurt Miller. I think that makes the pitch a little bit easier for free agents.
Oh, it's a great duo. We have LA. We have great coaching. Come on down.
There you go. And the great coaching part, like that hasn't been true for the Sparks in a minute, let's just say.
What did Teddy Long do to you?
Like, Teddy Long is what you call. You know what? We are here. With that being said, let's move to the NBA. Hold on a minute, player. Anyway, wow, what a shot. Just some housekeeping on our end. In the last episode of Dunker Spot, we were talking with Doris Burke. We were talking through some of the rookie extensions and players that did not get extensions before the deadline. At the time of recording, DeAndre Hunter of the Atlanta Hawks did not have an extension. Deadline had passed before we started recording. And then we get the late report from Woj, like, hey, actually, the Hawks and DeAndre Hunter did agree to a four-year deal, up to $95 million. So just wanted to make a brief correction there.
How much has that irked you?
Oh, it's bugged me to no end, man. Because we had, like, I'm normally, like, talking through different tabs, pulling my notes up, pulling my notes back down. I check my phone, make sure nothing's popped up on the timeline. With the Doris pod, I was like, nope, we're just going to have notes. I'm going to leave my phone alone. I don't want to get any sort of distracted, anything like that. And the one time, they're just like, you know what? I'm just not looking at Twitter at all during this episode. Is when I miss Woj tweeted 8 o'clock about an extension that came in at 6. And it's like, okay, sure.
Hey, man, there's nothing we could have done about it. And there was no entry point. I saw it on my phone pop up. And I was just like, oh, well, at least we talked about him.
Yeah, we did a good job of discussing this game either way. But yeah, we want to be corrected at the Dunker Spot. Now, we are roughly a week into the regular season of the 2022-23 season. We're recording kind of early on a Monday afternoon, so we are recording before the Monday slate of games. So any stats that may be cited on this episode, they will not include the games for Monday night. So just keep that in mind as you listen. Steve, what teams have caught your eye to begin this season?
This is going to be tough. I have to go with the Boston Celtics just to start. I've been just very impressed by what they've done to start this season. And if you had, and we go back to the questions we had about Boston in particular, I think they've answered a lot of them so far. The formula is definitely still there. The defense is still very, very good. Very, very annoying. Very uncooperative with whatever you want to do. Now, of course, they did give up a lot of points to the Magic. So maybe not the best timing on my part, but just when you watch the totality of it, their lineups pose such an issue. Just starting Al Horford, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Marcus Smart. Where are you attacking? What are you trying to open up?
Yeah.
And then you also throw in, hey, here's Grant Williams and Malcolm Brogdon as well. And hey, here's Noah Vonleh doing his job in pick and roll defense.
Boy, is he.
So it's just like they have such a good blend on that end. They're active on the ball, just tremendous weak side defense. And they're already executing game plan wise. I thought what they did with Joel Embiid when they played the Sixers was incredible, especially this early in the season, to time your doubles up on his move, like on the move every time. It wasn't, hey, we're coming early. It isn't, hey, we're coming automatically. It's, hey, once he starts getting into his rhythm and tries to drive, hit him now. Mm-hmm. And they did it on multiple times. And that kind of execution is great because that's what they're going to do in the playoffs. And that's when it's really going to have an impact. Mm-hmm. Offensively, I really like the concepts that they've tried so far this season. It just feels like the flow is better. It feels like there's better movement. I feel like there's more attempts to go from side to side where you have to deal with Jaylen Brown. Now the ball swings. Now you have to deal with Jason Tatum. That kind of blend is good. You have Marcus Smart with the ball in his hands, which is just so important. We've talked about it. When he has the ball in his hands and he's able to penetrate, look at who he's kicking to. Look at who gets to attack scrambling defenses. And now you have Malcolm Brogdon who does that as well. And then Derek White is paying off. You know, it wasn't just a playoff run. He's really fitting in on both ends of the floor, adding scoring, adding playmaking. So while the depth is a little concerning, I mean, it's a long season. And, you know, how much we're going to see Sam Hauser, how much we're going to really see Noah Vonleh, Blake Griffin's going to pop in and out. But as far as what they bring to the table, it's been a really good start for me. And I got to give him a salute for the Brogdon trade. He just fits like a glove. Casually sliding him into lineups. He can anchor a second unit squad. He can blend in with any of their top players. His ability to make plays off the dribble, attack in transition. Now he's attacking screaming defenses as opposed to having to be the person who has to create the play, which has always been, I guess, one of the question marks for him. It's been a really good start from Boston.
I've been massively impressed with what they've done offense. Quick stat, they are, according to Clean the Glass, they are easily the best half-court offense in basketball right now, which, again, it's been 3 days. We are like a week in, so the actual number will probably drop as we get a larger sample. But it kind of matches the eye. Like, they've really been flowing, like just having the pin downs on both sides of the floor, center handling the middle of the floor, making defenses choose, okay, who are we sending extra attention to? Can we track these screens? Are we switching these and giving Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown a mismatch? Are we trailing and we now have Jaylen Brown getting downhill or Jason Tatum getting downhill? You've mentioned Malcolm Brogdon, just what he's been able to do, like a guy that can kind of flow in some of those off-ball sets as well, get downhill and knock down shots. Or like I did a quick video about it after the season opener with Boston setting up a play where they have Jason Tatum coming off of a screen in the middle of the floor and then kind of flow from there. Malcolm Brogdon can just attack off the bounce. He doesn't need a screen to get downhill. And just having that level of downhill juice and having that randomness into your half-court offense, it helps. If you do face a good defense, if they're able to switch and take away some of those advantages, to have a guy like Malcolm Brogdon say, okay, cool, your third best defender is guarding me, I can just get into his chest and get 2 feet in the paint and kick off the scramble sequence if necessary. We don't have to call anything fancy. That's such a luxury for this Boston team who last year, before the calendar year turned, we had questions about what is the half-court flow for this team. We know what talent they have. We know what skill sets they have and how they can be meshed together. Where's the connectivity? Where's the tempo in the half-court? What does the flow look like? And for Malcolm Brogdon just fit in like he has, for Derek White, who's played very well, he's knocking down threes right now. We'll see how long that lasts. But you add that to what he brings as a driver, as a connective playmaker, as a screener when they invert for Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, and the advantages that that creates, it just feels like Boston is really starting to tap into, oh, we have a lot of pieces. We have a lot of high IQ guys. We have a lot of skilled players that can do different things within a possession. If we figure out a way to flow all of this together into one coherent, never stopping system, teams aren't really going to be able to guard us. They're always going to give up something. And it's been fun to see Boston tap into that as early as they have been. Like, even against Philadelphia, they were constantly generating advantages in the half court. I do think the overall offensive numbers were kind of juiced by Philly just being terrible in transition. And we'll talk about Philly a little bit later in the pod. But I've been really impressed with what they've done in the half court. And Jason Tatum has just been insane on both ends of the floor. He has a floater now. We're here.
Here you go.
We here are you go. Here. The Jason Tatum floater here.
Give Nikias a 6'6", 7", a 6'6", 6'8" person with a floater and watch him lose his mind.
It's all that's been missing. That's all that's been missing. But no, seriously, Jason Tatum has been really good. Like, is this the first season of his career that he's like shot well from the field within the first 2 weeks of the season?
I'm gonna go yes, because I don't like feel like hitting a refresh on this tab. But it's not just his shot making. It's the decision making. Mm-hmm. It's the force that he's driving offensively. He is making quick decisions. It's catch. If a screen comes, process, put it down, hit you, try and get in the paint. He's getting paint touches. Like, it's not like, hey, I can just get to my pull up whenever I want. He knows he can do that, but I'm going to hesitate. I'm going to hit you. I'm going to try and initiate contact. I'm going to get in the paint, get my floater off. Like, he's using the space well. And if you now have to really deal with Tatum in this fashion, this early in the season, how does that impact him going forward? I mean, the man, what, first Celtic in franchise history to record over 100 points to the team's first three games of the season. Sorry, Larry Bird, that record's gone for you.
Yeah, that's wild. He's been cooking. To your aggression point, 25 free throw attempts through three games for Jason Tatum. And for someone as recently as the finals, kind of struggled with some of the physicality that we've seen in the half court with teams really gearing up against him. To see him be like, nah, I'm just putting my shoulder into your chest and I can also finish over you. Or because my arms are so long, you're just going to hack me. I'll just live at the line. That's a fun development. Because one of the questions I had last year was like, okay, Marcus Smart can get downhill. Question mark when he does get downhill, but he can get downhill. Jaylen Brown definitely can get downhill. We don't know if the ball's coming out if he gets downhill. Jason Tatum is the one. One, he's just your best player, but two, if he's able to get more comfortable getting downhill, and we've seen the kind of passing growth that he's made over the last two or three seasons, again, that juices what you can do in the half court. Like, he's just going to draw extra eyeballs when he has the ball. If he's not getting two to the ball in pick and roll, he's attacking from the top of the key. He's getting someone stunned to get the nail. Someone's digging down from the corner. The big is stepping up. He's drawing two, sometimes three, in terms of attention. If he can be used as a pressure point to really get downhill consistently, I don't know what you do with the Celtics offense aside from hope that they miss shots. And again, they are doing this without, like, their best roller right now. Their best screener is Noah Vonleh. He deserves his flowers. Their best roller right now is Derek White or Marcus Smart. Like, is that a fair thing to say? And again, those inverted looks help quite a bit. But, like, they're doing this without Robert Williams in the half-court offense to also bend and stress defenses in that way.
Yeah, Robert Williams is only going to add to the blame. I like the point you made about White and Smart as screeners, because not only are they hurting on ball, they're part of the action off. So instead of just being able to space and help, they're screening for someone into a handoff. They can come set a pick and roll. You can invert it, have Tatum as a screener. Like, there's just different things that he can do, and the Celtics have done it so far. And even Jaylen Brown, like, I point to his development. I can't necessarily pull a stat that's going to point to it, but he just feels like, okay, I'm going to try and make the right play. I'm going to try and make the right read without taking away his aggressive mindset, which is such a key factor that gets lost in player development sometimes. Sometimes players can get so focused, or coaches can get so focused in on, hey, we need you to do this, that you end up taking away what brought that player to the dance. We haven't seen that with Jaylen Brown, which is a positive for the Celtics. But yeah, it's been two thumbs up so far.
It's been really good. Any other team that have caught your eye in this opening week?
Come on, Nikias. It would not be the opening week of the season if we didn't have a swing to the corner and me flying by on a pump fake.
Oh, this should be good.
The Portland Trail Blazers.
Ah, we here. We are here.
The Portland Trail Blazers. What's the record, Nikias?
They are undefeated. They are 3-0.
3-0 Portland Trailblazers. Side note, Utah and Portland being at the top of the West is wild.
That's
what we thought about coming in. But I more so just like how it's coming together for them. I think in the preseason, it was, wait, is this the vision? How is this going to work? And watching them during the season, I kind of get it. I see the vision. Like, I think there was a play against the Lakers. Josh Hart comes off a handoff, pulls a three. And I was like, well, he really just has just enough, I got this, for this Blazer team. Like, just the correct level of, I got this. And that's where I started to think. And as I was watching, I started to see just the pieces fit a lot better. Now, Damian Lillard doing this absolutely helps. If he's going to drop 41 in back-to-back nights like nothing, then yeah, we got some different math that we're doing. But there's an attempt. You know, there's an attempt to do more. There's an attempt to get more off-ball movement. And it feels like something they've been trying to work through for a year plus. You know, you had that Blazer team where you had things that worked. You kind of had to put your footprint on it, but also not mess up what it had. You evolved, found some things, didn't necessarily have the talent to make it work. Now you got everybody back. We see Damian Lillard, Simons, Grant, Josh Hart flying off screens, getting dribble handoffs. There's just more of an attempt, and there's more pressure that's put on a defense. And the defense has to digest a lot more with four guys who, in theory, can handle the ball, can attack, can be put in different actions, can do different things. Like, you know, for all the talk about that game, it was Jeremy Grant that ended up getting the layup in a play that was pretty much designed for him. In all this talk, you know, in the Phoenix game, it was Anthony Simons getting some big buckets late. Like, that's a different dynamic. And when we talk about this Portland team, so much of the evolution has been, well, what's Dame going to do in pick and roll? Can Dame get two on the ball? Can Nurkic finish? You got to deal with Josh Hart coming off a handoff. Now Jeremy Grant comes off a screen from Dame. Now it's a dribble handoff between those two. It's not just Dame pick and roll or bust. And that's where Portland needed to get to. Instead of that, pick and roll creates everything. There's just more room to grow. There's more room for Simons to be himself. There's more room for Josh Hart to be himself. Nurk can just kind of be Nurk. And I know you have Nurk thoughts, but.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's just good. Like, I've really liked Jeremy Grant's start. It feels like an absolute sweet spot for him to just be himself. I feel like it's right in between Denver and half of that Detroit tenure.
The first part.
Yeah, more so that. And Denver, it felt like there was just a little bit of a cap on what he could be. Not that he couldn't do it, but it's just like, you're only going to get so many opportunities. And Detroit felt like he had all of the opportunity until he didn't. Here, and this is going to be really basic analysis, but he can do all the Jeremy Grant things without having to do the Jeremy Grant things. But whenever you want to go do the Jeremy Grant things, go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I think that's important. Like that's this was one of my biggest question marks about Portland getting Jeremy Grant initially, because it was just like, okay, I see how he can fit here. I see how he can complement this backcourt. What does he want to do? What does he envision his role to be? Does he envision himself being just the number two to Dame? Or does he see himself as part of like this three-headed monster of, okay, Dame's head of the snake, Anthony Simons can bomb away or attack tilted defenses, Jeremy Grant can also be used in a multitude of ways. And like at the end of the clock, if there's eight on the clock and Dame's already been trapped early in the possession, give it to me. I will get you a bucket to get to the free throw line. And if he can find that sweet spot, I'm in. I just didn't know which version we're going to see. And to your point, that seems to be the version that Portland has gotten so far. As a guy that can flow off ball, as a guy that can grab a defensive rebound and push whenever he gets the board, and either just get downhill early or just kind of kick off the chain of commands from there. Or end the clock. To your point, they basically ran the last plays of the game for him to get a bucket against LeBron James, and he finishes through contact. Like, this is the kind of score that he can be. And so I've been impressed with that. I have been, it's funny, we talk about the offense and different things that they're doing. Like, the off-ball movement popped for me early. And the off-ball usage for Dame in particular popped for me early. Going back to the Kings game with Casey Outfalla defending Dame, which was fun for me. But I'm just like, oh, they're just off-rip. Dame, you are coming off screen. Like, we're not establishing the pick and roll first. And I like that. One, just with that particular matchup, like, yeah, make KZ chase through a bunch of screens versus just having him stare at you, because he's rangy and can do that. But it's also like, okay, now we're going to see what your team defensive principle, we're going to see where your focus and your discipline is. Are you sending two to Dame? Because if you are, everything else opens up. And it's a way to get that same amount of pressure in the half court and force defenses to bend without Dame having to dribble the ball 30 times a possession. Not that he wants to be like a grinded down guy, but just in general, you want to take some of that load off of him. And when you have this much offensive talent to where you can trust Anthony Simons to not just attack a tilt defense, but to initiate some stuff. Heck, Anthony Simons just made a game winner. So, I mean, he's already gotten that early trust. Again, Jeremy Grant could do that. Josh Hart, he does not mind taking shots. He does not mind getting downhill. It just opens up the possibilities of what you could do offensively. And defensively, again, we are very early. This is the first week. Portland's fifth in defensive rating right now.
Uh-oh.
How about
apologize?
Who had that on the bingo card? Now, it does help that they have faced who they faced, in particular the very last opponent that they faced. That helps. That plays into the very, very early sample size. But like, even with that, to
the Suns?
But even to that, but even to your point about seeing the vision, like, they want to be steady enough with their starters to flow into some of the more athletic players off the bench and become a little bit more switchable and a little bit more rangy. And that's my opportunity to shout out Justice Winslow, who has been flying all over the place to kick off this season. Just one of my favorite players to watch, has been for a while, but watching him at the five against Sacramento, playing some three, playing some four, he's gotten the Devin Booker matchup. He's defended Domantas Sabonis early on this year. We've seen him flowing between the Lakers start. Like, he just does whatever you ask him to do defensively. He's not scared of any of those matchups. But between him, Nasir Little doing things, Josh Hart also defending, Jeremy Grant, for my eye at the very least, like, he's been pretty solid defensively. And that was a question mark I had with him too. Like, not that he can't defend at all, but against certain type of matchups and, you know, against those power wings, like, what is that going to look like? He's mostly held up so far through three games. So I've been very impressed. This has been a very positive Blazer segment, so I'm not going to say too much about Nurk. I would just like for him to find a role and find a level of consistency. That's all I want. I will keep it there. Very impressed by
that. That was a good shot. Find a role. Trying to say he can't finish. I like what you did there.
Scout's eye. That's amazing. But
hey, man,
I've been impressed. I have indeed been impressed with what Portland's been able to put together.
No, and you throw in, I'm glad you mentioned Justice Winslow. him and Nasir Little, they both just feel comfortable. But Justice just, it's a lot of people who can do things and they're in lineups where they can do them. And the scheme still has its question marks. I don't know if the base is necessarily strong or as strong as they would want it to be, but they at least have enough size and effort to compete. Mm-hmm. And that's a step in the right direction for them. Mm-hmm. So if you can like at least bring some activity. Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I feel like that's one of the six teams that we said is about, like, hey, we don't need you to be an elite defense. Just get your defense to, like, 18th to 20th. The offense is going to be really good. If the Blazers are fifth, this is just a contender. But, like, again, the early Jones, like, you can see what they're trying to accomplish on both ends of the floor. Like, I've liked what I've seen.
That actually just reminds me randomly of Coach Michael Malone. For Denver, saying, is Michael Porter Jr. ever going to be Scottie Pippen? No, but he's trying. That's all I need.
That's such a bar. He's never going to be this. We just want him to work towards becoming that. If he's on the right road, he's taking the right exit, then we're good. We're good to go. Any other teams you want to shout before we move?
I do want to give a quick salute to Milwaukee and Phoenix. Give a slight apology to their fan bases. I do still have some question marks, but you are doing the thing. So salute to y'all.
All righty. Well, then I will jump on the opposite end. The Utah Jazz are undefeated through the first week or so of the season, just like we all expected. Sixth in offense right now.
I mean, before you get going, I will say this preview pod, I did say this is the type of talented bunch that believes in each other and competes and has a chip on their shoulder with a first-year head coach, potentially overachieves. You know what I'm saying? Subscribe to the Dunker Spot. Well, I mean, you're listening, so you probably already did. But tell your friends.
You did, in fact, say that. You can find the timestamps on one of our very thorough preview podcasts if you do want to hear for proof. But just believe us, we don't lie to you. But Utah, top 10 in offense and defense right now. How about that? Lauri Markkanen has been insane. And I wish I could remember who it was I saw on my timeline to ask, like, hey, what if what he's doing in Eurobasket, what if that just carries over? What if he's just that? And I was like, well, I don't know if he's just going to be like leading scorer 20 plus a night. I don't know if he's going to do all that. And through the first three games, he's averaging 24, 10, and 4. And it's like, oh, well, it's still early, but that would kind of track what we saw from him this summer, to where he was getting buckets any way you wanted him to. Could post them up, use them as a handoff hub and bend defenses that way. He could come off of handoffs if he wants to, can come off of screens, lift up from the corner, fire away against contest. Or if your closeout is overeager, he can attack, get downhill for you as well. I am enjoying what he's bringing to the table. I am enjoying what Will Hardy's doing and using him. And just the fun of the Lauri Kelly Olynyk front court. Having two guys with that kind of size, with that kind of shooting, and also that amount of ball handling and playmaking ability between the two, it just opens you up to invert your offense if you want to. You can just run your sets higher up and have defenses still worry, like, okay, well, I can't sag off of this handoff because he may just decide I'm not going to hand it off. I'm just going to shoot from three because both of them are really good shooters. But watching them flow between each other, whenever Utah's able to generate switches, Lauri Markkanen is fine shooting over the top. Kelly Olynyk is fine doing the herky-jerky. He looks uncoordinated, but actually he knows exactly what he's doing. Now he's 6 feet from the basket, and now you have to send help, or he's flipping in an awkward shot, getting to the free throw line, or he's kicking it somewhere. He's just one of the funkier but effective offensive players in the league and has been for a while. Like, I still remember him fondly from the Miami set, the Kelly Keeper word to Eric Reed of the Heat broadcast. That was fun watching him just bomb away in Houston. I was like, wait a minute, why is he just 18 and 9 all of a sudden? This is odd. This is high usage Kelly Olynyk. That's cool. And so we're starting to see similar elements of that. And he's held up enough defensively. I still have my question marks there long term, but he's held up enough to where the defense has been workable so far. Jordan Clarkson in the starting lineup. Not something that I had on the bingo card. We talked about this on the pod, also through the watch parties. Like, I thought Colin Sexton would just get that job from jump. This is probably the most decisive that I've seen Jordan Clarkson play, which is fun. He's absolutely going to get the shots up. But if he's going to be, I catch, I shoot, or I catch and I drive immediately and get shots up, I'm fine with that mostly. And he's been able to keep that flow and tempo up in Utah's offense because of that. And then just empowering the guys off the bench. Colin Sexton, shots haven't really failed for him the way that he wants them to, but like he's flying around. He's back physically. I was watching the Jazz Pelicans game earlier today and watching him attempt chase down blocks and watching him fly in for rebounds and watching him attack the basket. He's just back physically. So I think it's only a matter of time before we see the efficient scoring Colin Sexton that we were accustomed to before the injury. It's been fun watching him going back to that Jazz Pelicans game, watching Talen Horton Tucker get on ball reps with a somewhat spaced floor this time. That's intriguing. And that's also been the fun of watching this Utah offense. Jordan Clarkson, the mismatches and different things that you can see from Kelly Olynyk and Lauri Markkanen, Mike Conley, Colin Sexton, Talen Horton Tucker in this game, they're getting downhill. They are actually getting 2 feet in the paint. And with the tempo that they're playing with and some of the movement that they're implementing in their half-court offense, like, you don't really get the rest defensively against them. And that kind of goes to your overall point where, like, these are just – they don't have a star, unless Lauri Markkanen is just this now, in which case, then, yes, they do. But, like, you zoom out, like, they don't have a star, a top-10 player, but, like, they have a lot of solid NBA players. And if you're playing with this kind of flow, again, like, you can't really hide anyone. Like, even in the Pelicans game, the player that you want to sag off of is Jared Vanderbilt, and he just, I think he hit 3 or 4 threes in that game. It's like, oh, well, if he's also doing this, which, shout out to Jared Vanderbilt, who's been amazing defensively to kick off this season. Go ahead.
Hey, is Vanderbilt making the leap that everyone thought McDaniels was going to?
Hey, man, I don't know, but like using him as a roller, and then defensively, he's doing a little bit of everything, man. Which, I mean, that's what he does defensively, but watching it with this Utah team in particular, and just watching the stark difference between him defensively and Kelly and Lauri, like it's been fun. And then you look at their front court, and it's, again, Lauri's a 7-footer. Kelly Olynyk's nearly a 7-footer. Jared Vanderbilt, 6'8", but he's rangy. Like, that's a lot of size and length. And so, like, even when Vanderbilt isn't involved in the action, or even if he is, and you're engaging him, but that means Utah's weaker defenders are on the back end, that's still a whole lot of size to navigate. And to their credit, it's been a lot of peeling in early, showing help at the nail, being parked in the right spot so the driving lanes aren't as open, spreading the arms. Now, again, they aren't the most fearsome defenders, but they're long, they're in the right spot. You have to navigate tight quarters against them. And you do that enough, and you do that, you're precise enough in that, you get teams late in the clock. And then it kind of doesn't matter how good your reputation is. You're taking contested shots. And so credit to what Utah's been able to do to kick off this season. I've been impressed. It's been a lot of fun.
Nah, and Utah being fun is fun, honestly. Lauri Markkanen, I guess I have to apologize to him again. This man is a Utah Jazz legend. He's a Utah Jazz legend. I won't repeat too much of what you said with the Kelly, Lauri front court, but it's just very fun to watch them just bend defenses because Utah is unpredictable right now. You don't necessarily know what it's going to be that hits you. It's a moving target. I am interested to see what it looks like once more teams have more tape on them. It can bog down. It can get late in the clock. I think they were, 4 or 5 minutes in that Pelicans game of just not scoring the basketball.
Yeah, to your point, that's conveniently coincided with Larry Nance at the 5 and the Pelicans just turning into a switch team instead of being a drop or an at the level team. Like, it's odd that the second that they went to that, you thought they just couldn't score anymore in that 4. But continue.
No, yeah. And then you got Mike Conley's steady play. 9 assists a game, Mike Conley. That's what, 5th or 6th in the league, something like that. Something. Anyways, free Mike. No, they're very fun. They're fun. They're a fun group to watch compete, and I just like seeing them be feisty.
I like it. I like it. Other main team that I want to get into. I do have some shouts after this, but the other team that really caught my eye. Don't know how many opportunities I have to do so in a positive light, so I'm going to do this now. The San Antonio Spurs getting off to a 2-1 start. Got absolutely blasted by the Charlotte Hornets in their first game. Absolutely blasted. since then. Able to beat the Pacers and a very high scoring, fun, up and down affair. Didn't feel like either team was going to miss. And then they beat the Sixers. And it's like, wait a minute. Didn't have that on the bingo card. Also, it didn't feel like one of those fluky wins. The Spurs shoot 58% from three on 40 attempts. The Sixers can't make anything. It's just a random night, random Saturday. But they genuinely played pretty well. I was listening to you talk about the Celtics plan against Joel Embiid. And as you were saying, like, had your time in the double on Joel's move, I was in my head and was like, man, that's so different from what San Antonio did. They were sending the double pretty early on Joel. And it flustered them at first. And he was like, oh, wait, I can just, if this is just how they're going to come, like, I can fake it out of it. I can just kick out of it. And it turned into a very bad thing. pretty early against Joel. Absolutely lit up the Spurs. But no, they were able to get the win anyway. We talked about it during the watch party. I can't remember if I said it on the pod or not, but did talk about this on the watch party. I was like, you know what? I think Keldon Johnson is going to average over 20 a game this year. He's at 21-7-3 right now. The aggression is still there. Going back to that Spurs-Sixers game, a couple of splits in the pick and roll from him was like, wait a minute. If the handle's getting even tighter, like, we know he can get downhill. We know he does not care about his body once he gets into the paint. He will fire into you. He's lost weight, but he's still very strong. And so you will just bounce off of him or he's getting to the free throw line. So, like, that's been fun. But watching him continue to fire away from three, shooting a shade under 42% from three to kick off the year on eight attempts would easily be a high in volume for him, just continuing the progression that we saw from him last season in terms of just willingness to fire from deep. So you combine the drives, you add in some driving craft and a tighter handle to be able to navigate higher pick and roll coverages, which, hey, if we're getting a semblance of two on the ball against Keldon Johnson, that's the growth you want to see from San Antonio right there. Like, your season is a success from that standpoint. If that's even if he's only getting that because he's their best player right now, and that's not the ideal role for him, the fact that he's even getting it and he's getting reps to figure out, okay, how do I counter this if bigs are playing closer up? How am I able to beat this as a scorer? Can I make passing reach from there? The fact that he's even getting these reps within the flow of a game is a positive. And so very intrigued by that portion. Devin Vassell, who might just have my favorite jumper to watch aesthetically, he's so smooth getting into the mid-range area. He's bombing away from three. Percentages aren't great right now, shade under 35%. But again, the willingness there, the rim rate is up for him right now. We'll see how that holds as the sample grows. But like, that's kind of the big question mark I have for him. He is a guy that loves the mid-range game because of the high release point. He can just kind of get shots there whenever he wants to. Slick footwork, so he can kind of snake screens to get to his spots. Will there be more of an emphasis for him to get downhill and get to the free throw line? And will that open up some of the kind of sneaky good passing chops that he has? So far, he is getting downhill a little bit more, so I am impressed. Jakob Poeltl just slinging passes across the lot. It's my favorite thing to watch. Him and Keldon Johnson low-key have a – I don't want to quite say mind-meld yet. It's not that good yet, but you can see the chemistry continue to grow between those two. Between the pick and rolls and the handoffs, Keldon pitching it to Jakob Poeltl in the high elbow and then immediately cutting down, and then it's a quick pass from Jakob. And it's like, man, this is the stuff that dreams are made of. That's been a fun connection to watch. Very quietly, like, and I'm going to watch more Spurs games because of it. Like, very quietly, they have a big man room full of guys that can make passes. Like, Jakob Poeltl can make passes. Gorgie Jang can make passes. Zach Collins can make passes. Jeremy Sochan will try to do anything. So we'll see. We will see where he's at offensively. But, like, quiet as kept. Like, they have a lot of high post options. And they have a lot of guys that are comfortable going off movement. Now, again, Doug McDermott and Devin Vassell, I guess, would be the only movement shooters I would classify on that roster. But they have guys that are comfortable lifting up from the corner, coming off a flare, coming off a pin down, and then making a move from there. So, like, you can kind of see this is what we want to accomplish. These are the kind of design looks that we want to have for our young guys and see how they handle it from there. And so early on, like, 2-1, again, competition, whatever, it's a weekend. But I've enjoyed watching the Spurs. Also, quick note defensively for them, because the question I had for you was like, hey, do we think the Spurs should do anything differently defensively in terms of their pick and roll coverages? They've switched a lot more this year. I don't know how I feel about it yet, but that does seem to be a notable scheme change. Like, I think some of that is just by virtue of, hey, if we're starting Jeremy Sochan and Jakob Poeltl together, like, yeah, we're more okay with just switching Jakob Poeltl out. And if he gets beat, then we're just going to have this Energizer buddy behind it because he's already insane defensively. And so this is a team, like, they want to get out and run. They're switching around. They're running off of screens. They're playing off of the bigs that can make passes and stuff. It's going to be a bad team overall, but, like, I'm kind of in on the play style already.
Well, I mean, this is kind of what I expected for them to do last year. Didn't really come out in the wash the same way. But, you know, they're still the Spurs. You're still going to get that ball movement. You're still going to get that tempo. Their guards are playing very well. It feels like they're more willing, or maybe it's because they're making more, but more willing to just let it fly from three, which I think is helping avoid some of those maybe half-court issues because, hey, we got a scramble here, let it fly. Like, we don't need to – we're not going to pass extra pass. Like, nope, we got this one. It's good. Let it go. I think Trey Jones has been really good for them. And his element in pick and roll, his element in pass and cut has been good. When Devin Vassell and Keldon Johnson are taking this opportunity to be as aggressive as you mentioned, that makes it a lot more fun. But it's been good to see them take the steps they need to. This is what you want to see from your young team. Playing together, playing the right way, and having some success on the way early. So, solid start for the Spurs. You muted, man.
Ah, well, we hear that. I started talking. I got the message on top. I was like, oh, no, I did the thing. But no, I was going to say Trey Jones and Tyus Jones, just the floater brothers. Like, that's fun. Just kind of does it. They get them in the 10 to 16 foot range. Like, shots going up and it's likely going in. I will say, like, the questions that I had with their offense, something that we both brought up, like, hey, so who's bending the defense? Like, the scheme can only do so much. Like, even early on with this sample, the Spurs are 25th in rim rate, 11th in mid-range rate. So it's still a lot of, we will get to the 10-foot marker aside from Keldon and who knows what kind of defensive presence he's going to see. We don't know who's puncturing this to kick things off. And so it is going to be interesting to see how they are able to navigate that. Again, this is a team that even Greg Popovich said, hey, we're not winning the title this year. So, like, you know, the losses are going to come at some point. But I am excited to see just how they navigate that and what kind of progression we're going to see from that. Other shouts that I had in that, again, not going to go super deep. The Hornets also getting off to a pretty solid start. Didn't have
Steve to Clifford.
Steve Clifford.
Doing, man. Steve Clifford things. I told you that man can get anybody to 8 seed.
He just keeps doing it, man. I don't understand. But anyway, the Hornets are 2-1. They're also flying around. Like, they're getting some contributions from a little bit of everyone. Like, Terry Rozier is just bombing away from three right now. Gordon Hayward, while he's on the court, he's looked pretty good. We hope he stays there. Kelly Oubre, a guy that I was like, hey, how's this going to work? And you said, hey, he can kind of be a Clifford guy if he buys in. Sure enough, Kelly Oubre playing well right now. Nick Richards, really playing well right now. if Nick Richards just solves the backup center question this year, like, I feel like regardless of where the Hornets land, bottom of the lottery, bottom of the play-in, like, that helps. That helps. Like, that gives Mark Williams time to develop, whether he's sitting in Greensboro, whatever the case may be. Not quite sure what it means for Kai Jones yet. I will table those thoughts. But shout out to Nick Richards for doing the thing right now.
That's so Steve Clifford. That's so on brand. LaMelo Ball goes down. Everyone just says, press sneak tank. Here we go. 2-1.
Sounds about right, man. And, like, just a quick shout out because I have to give them a shout out. Someone has to. Golden State Warriors, like, they do have a loss against the Denver Nuggets, but they're going to be really good. Like, I've seen enough. The champs are the champs. Let's move to the, the less savory version. Teams that make us go, I will kick this one off.
I have a rebrand opportunity.
Oh, what we got?
Teams that made you think.
That's a lot cleaner.
There you go. That's why they pay me the small bucks.
We could rock it up. Teams that made me think. I will kick things off with the Miami Heat. A 1-2 start for them.
Uh-oh. Tradition like no other. Nekias with early smoke for the Heat.
I don't have early smoke for the Heat. It's more so my brow is raised with a couple of things. Like, one, the big one for me is just kind of, okay, what is this defense really going to look like? Like, we know this was going to be a switch group. I feel like this is year 45 of me being like, hey, I don't mind switching, but if you're switching literally everything and you're doing it softly, you're just giving teams matchups to attack. And that was a lot of what happened in the third quarter in particular. against the Chicago Bulls in the opener, where the Heat were mostly winning that game, and then DeMar DeRozan just said, actually, I'm just not missing anymore. And I'm just going to attack Tyler Hero over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And it's just like, okay, like Hero's competing, like it's not necessarily his fault. But like there was enough miscommunication on the back end. And more importantly, they just gave the switch whenever DeMar wanted it. It's like, don't make it easy for opponents to find your weak point. Because with the new start lineup with Tyler Hero in the lineup, like, again, he competes, he fights. It's not an effort issue. It's not even really a positioning issue at this point. Like, there are just physical limitations with him. He doesn't, like, Max Strus doesn't have those same ones. Max Strus is just stronger, a little bit more mobile than Hero is. So, like, you don't get the same effect in terms of mismatch hunting. And so you're putting Hero in with the starters. Like, the theory is you juice the offense in terms of secondary creation. You definitely juice it in terms of shooting. But on the other end, the questions that you have, well, he's surrounded by Kyle Lowry if he's healthy. He's surrounded by Jimmy Butler. He's surrounded by Bam Adebayo. And in this case, he's surrounded by Caleb Martin. Like, okay, cool. We can kind of insulate this. It's fine. If you're just going to give up the switch and then kind of leave him out to dry, or if your help isn't as airtight as you want it to be, what does that really do for you?
Well, let's stay here for a second. Okay. This is going to be the test for Miami, and in particular Tyler Hero. It was my quote-unquote hesitation with the move, which makes sense. I mean, if you gave him the bag he produced, it probably is going to be time for him to start if you want to hit the ceiling with what he brings to the table. Yeah. There's no doubt teams are going to look to attack him. They've been looking to attack him. Miami has never really been afraid to switch him, but they have a regular season to try and figure out what's the best route they want to take with that. Can you produce some sort of scheme versatility? Can you switch and show help from your other defenders? What's the thing you feel the most comfortable with? Because you go back to just that Chicago game, and you know it's going to be an issue in the Eastern Conference when you look at some of those players they have. But, you know, it's a combination of just the will. Like, teams are so willing to attack that matchup. So even if you give the switch, a guy like DeMar is going right to work. So while usually the concept is, hey, we'll switch, we'll show up, we'll pull in, try and take away the bodies, and then we'll close back out. If they go that quick, it's tough. If DeMar hits them and now he goes right up, it's tough. And the last thing you want to do is get into a scenario where you have multiple coverages that aren't working. Because A, that's not going to stop the team from wanting to do it. So which poison are they going to choose? So if you get into a scenario where, okay, now Tyler's doing a show and recover, which we've seen Miami do with Duncan Robinson in the past. But and now everyone's on the same page and you give a bucket. Uh-oh. Are you putting two on the ball and opening that up that way? So it's just, what are they going to land on? What are they going to live with? And how are they going to play out of it? I think the more lumps they take now, the better off they'll be, because they know this is going to be the thing. Before, it was like, okay, we need to be able to survive maybe this X amount minute stretch and keep Tyler on the floor. He's starting. So, okay, this is part of it. And that's most, you know, most defenders, even if you have something you can't live with, okay, we'll live with the drop and try and pull up. You know what I mean? That kind of deal. So can Miami find that? But continue.
Okay. So, no, those are all valid points. And I would just say, like, I'm just keeping an eye on, like, to your point, what the coverages are going to be. Is it just going to be switch? Will it be switch and double? Will it be show and recover? Will it be, like, a lot of what we saw last year's where, okay, we'll give the switch. Here's a whole lot of early help. Have fun navigating that. Like, these are all things that Miami has proven able to do, which is why, again, this is my brow is raised, not holy crap, this Heat team is going to be the eighth seed now. So just to, you know, just to clarify that point for me. But like, this is where I'm just like, okay, they have to figure out what is this. Other thing for me is the center room. Like, Bam Adebayo being more aggressive, like, we're just going to keep tabs on that. We're going to see. Awful opener for him. He's been pretty solid since then. So that's just, you know, great players have bad games sometimes. I wasn't super alarmed by what we saw against the Bulls. He missed some bunnies and stuff. Like, it's fine. He's going to be all right. What I do have questions about is what happens when Bam Adebayo goes to the bench? Because something that we talked about during the preview in particular is like, hey, like, no, PJ Tucker going to Philadelphia doesn't mean the Heat lost like a 92 overall player. But like, okay, who is the small ball five option for them? Do they have one? And then with the traditional centers, who's backing up Bam? Omer Yurtseven hasn't played yet this year. Dwayne Dedmon, as much as I have paraded his productivity coming off the bench, we have reached hashtag that point with Dwayne Dedman. It might just be it. This might just be it. Like, we were approaching this point during last postseason in particular. If you want to have fun or make yourself cry, depending on your rooting interest, go to the box score of the Heat Celtics game and just look at the plus minuses. Just look at the plus minus of that game. Look at the final score of the game. The Celtics ended up winning, I think, 111-104. Look at the plus minuses of that game. I have concerns about the Heat when Bam Adebayo goes to the bench right now. Like, if there is an actual concern that I have, like the hero thing and defense kind of a question mark, well, kind of like a brow raise, we'll see. I'm concerned about backup center right now. Because even when Omer Yurtseven comes back, there's still going to be questions like, okay, if you're playing here with Bam, what is the spacing going to look like? What is the role going to be? If you're not playing here with Bam, can he do anything outside of drop? And even when he's in drop, will he provide anything more than defensive rebounding? Because the actual contest and the physicality there, like, it leaves some things to be desired. Nikola Jovic, who is not going to play Monday night, again, recording early on a Monday afternoon, not playing against the Raptors because he came off the bench during the Caleb Martin, Christian Coloco incident, which I still don't understand what sparked all of that. That was just a lot. But at any rate, I don't think he's your answer at the five right now. Like, that's literally a new position for him. He was a wing overseas. And so I don't know if that's going to be the answer short term. That's something that the Heat want him to develop into because of the shooting, because of the playmaking. But that's not the answer right now. So that if there's an actual concern I have, it's not about Bam. I think he's going to be fine. When he goes to the bench, what are the Heat doing in the front court? And I guess a smaller thing that I'm keeping an eye on, just the bench in general. Because with Hero being the stars, like, you can still stagger it. But, and to that point, like, Victor Oladipo hasn't played yet, so we'll see what it looks like. But they don't have the same, hey, this guy will draw two or this guy will draw extra eyeballs right now. And so with Hero on the start lineup, I do wonder, like, how they're able to generate really good looks with that second unit. Is it just going to be Gabe Vincent playing well? Like, that may very well be the answer. We'll see. When Victor Oladipo comes back, what would that look like if he's in a primary ball handling role there? The Heat have tried to juice the second unit with Max Strus and Duncan Robinson playing together, add some extra spacing, add some off-ball elements there. So we'll see, but what does that mean defensively? Like, we had the conversation about Duncan Robinson during the preview pod. So that's kind of like the Heat are making me think to go with the rebranded title here. So I'll start with them. Wait, did you have more Heat thoughts before? Because I have a second team.
No, we can dive right into your second team. I mean, Miami for me has the benefit of the doubt going for them. So I am interested to see what the rotation looks like. Is the off-ball movement going to enhance their overall attack with the second unit? Or is this going to be those possessions where it's 15 seconds of what followed by 5 seconds of ball movement that creates a great shot? Mm-hmm. We can table the Bam Adebayo aggressive question for a later date. Okay. I do like using Jimmy Butler as a screener to try and reverse engineer some switches, but we can also table that. But no, I'm good. Let's dive into the next team. I'm sure you're going to have fun with this one.
Yes. I have some thoughts about the Philadelphia 76ers. And, like, I guess my primary question, and I think I feel a little bit better about it after the Spurs game, my primary question was, like, is Joel Embiid okay? And I don't mean it in a meme-y way. I don't mean it as like a ha-ha, let's make fun of this guy way. Like, I mean, genuinely, is he okay? Because, like, watching him, it was like, okay, he doesn't seem engaged. And that's weird for a guy that is as good as he is. It's the beginning of the season. He's coming off, what, consecutive second-place finishes in MVP voting? This is coming off of a positive offseason, so there should be excitement about the Sixers group. They went undefeated in the preseason. Like, okay, cool. Let's see it. And then the Celtics game happened, and it's like, okay, like, this is a super deep drop where he doesn't seem very active. He gets up to the level, looks bad. If he's above the break, he's not getting back to the rim to contest things, and it's just bad. You talked about what Boston was able to do scheme-wise in terms of the doubles, but, like, also, he just took some weird shots. It's very perimeter-heavy, too. Like, I made a video about the first possession of the game for Philadelphia where his post catch wasn't really a post catch. He caught it like 20 feet from the basket. And it's like, what is this? And so my first thought was like, is there something going on? Because there always seems to be these instances in sports and really in life or with people, with celebrity, where it's like something seems off and the immediate reaction is to make jokes. And then we find out months later or something like, oh, something happened with a childhood friend, or he's just going through it mentally. So I'm just like, okay, Joel Embiid just literally doesn't look right. I hope he's good. And then we get the report that his conditioning isn't where it needs to be because he's been dealing with plantar fasciitis. And it's like, wait, one, why are we just hearing about this? Two, that makes sense. Yeah, he probably ain't super active defensively, or he isn't really forcing the issue offensively if he's trying to get his conditioning back because he's dealing with a foot issue. That would make a lot of things make sense. And so, again, he just demolished the Spurs. I'm like, okay, well, he may just be on the way back. So that's fine. I do have an eye on some of the half-court flow for Philadelphia overall and just how the touches are distributed, how some of the play calls are distributed. It's been a lot of Harden, and he's been very good. So it's not necessarily criticism of him in particular. But, like, the Celtics game in particular, I'm like, okay, this is a lot of Harden. There's a lot of Harden and Embiid pick and roll. Tyrese Maxey's just kind of chilling until a small spurt in the fourth quarter. That's kind of odd. And then Tobias Harris also wasn't super involved offensively. Earlier Sunday, I posted the screenshot of, like, the touches distribution post-Harden trade compared to this year. And it's like Harden over 100 touches. Nets closest guys in the 70s. It's like, okay, I appreciate how well Harden's played. Do you want this kind of dichotomy overall? Like, what does that mean for what you're trying to accomplish in the half court? And how does that help you get towards the blend, ideally, to where Harden can operate the tip of the spear, Maxey can operate the tip of the spear, you can do things with Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid can be your post threat, he can be a pick and roll guy, he can be a pick and pop guy. How do you find that blend when the disparity is this wide? And then defensively, again, like, I think some of this would be solved just by Joel Embiid feeling better and getting in better shape after dealing with the foot stuff. And so, like, I'm going to give some grace on that front as well. But it's been kind of weird for Philadelphia defensively. And so that's where I'm just kind of like, all right, let's just see what's happening here. It's kind of where I'm at with them.
No, I mean, the weird part is the optics have been very bad. The defense has not looked good. The offense has struggled. I mean, we've had, certainly you could pull any sort of possession and just want to pull your hair out. The fixes seem easier for them, but I do also have some concerns. I mean, because if you think about it, the big question was James Harden this, and he's done what he's supposed to do. Like, he almost won that Bucks game. Looks more like himself. Attacking Grant Williams. The mid-range pull-up step back, huge for him.
The mid-range game.
Love that for him. Makes his life so much easier. Doesn't have to just rely on the step back three. Can save the turbo button for whoever he wants it. That's a different point. The problem overall kind of ties into the assumption of success. Like, hopefully Joel Embiid is okay. And him being okay is going to fix a lot of things. You probably had some wiggle room roster-wise or coaching-wise if you thought Harden would be working his way into the season. You probably don't have the same wiggle room if it's Joel Embiid trying to figure it out early. And fair or unfair, like, he's going to turn the corner, but that's a tough one to figure it out because he's such a rock for them on both ends. And then the defense, kind of flat, where you can't afford it. You don't really have a margin for error. Offensively, the tempo is bad. Like, 16 seconds to set up a Joel Embiid post-up.
Yeah.
Not great. I liked what they did against Boston, where it was, hey, let's put Embiid at the elbow. Let's try and get some attacks there. It's also my elbow action. But it doesn't feel like we've had the same blend that we've normally had. And maybe that ties into the injury. So where it's just like, hey, just post up, try and get some buckets that way. So maybe they'll be better there. I am concerned about the lineups.
Yes.
For me. So a lot of these signings were to kind of get James Harden and some more folks that would enhance that lineup when it's time for him to play off the bench. Mm-hmm. One, other teams just are not cooperating. But the Celtics said, hey, cool, nice lineup. We're just going to go small and switch everything. And the Bucks said, cool, Jrue Holiday, don't get screened and don't lead that matchup. It's like, I totally get Harrell, I get Yang, I get House. Playing them all together seems massively redundant. Only one of them can screen. And so which one's it going to be? Are you going to get the coverage you want? And then that Embiid maxi unit doesn't have as much juice. You brought up an interesting point with the usage. And that's where I'm like, maybe Joel Embiid just being healthier helps a lot. It makes things make a lot more sense. Does it tilt to James Harden so much because he's playing so well right now? Is that changing the math? But then how do you get Tobias going? Like, what's going to be the other thing for him? Like, yeah, you run some nice sets for him to cut. He's got some nice slice post-up sets, but it feels like a big key for him is attacking scrambling defenses, and the defenses are not scrambled right now. So it's like, okay, now he has to go get one. Tyrese Maxey, how do you balance that out when he's on the floor with James Harden? And you're still trying to establish Embiid. And you also have James Harden. So it just kind of feels like some timing will help that out. But if you look at just basic scoring, and I'm being basic right now, sorry, folks. So last year, Embiid averaged 30, Harden averaged 21, Maxey averaged 17.5, Tobias averaged 17.2. Embiid's at 27, Harden's up to 26, Maxey's up to 20, Tobias down to 14. Joel reaches another level. And Tobias steadies himself out. I think they're okay. The bigger issue is there's not another soul on that roster that averages more than 5 points a game.
Yeah. And like one of the questions that I had was like, hey, we know what PJ Tucker is going to mean for the locker room. We know he's going to mean from a toughest standpoint. You know, in theory, what kind of versatility he's going to give you defensively. How are they going to use him on offense? Because if he's back to just being stand in the corner or set this occasional pin in or flare screen, I don't like that. Because I do wish they had a little bit more connectivity in their offense. And I thought Tyrese Maxey would kind of be the fix of this. Because like, hey, if you're using him as the tip of the spear, like he's not the best player, that's Joel Embiid. He's not the best offensive guard, that's James Harden. But if you're using Tyrese Maxey's movement, shooting, just the general speed and the downhill juice, if you're using him as kind of your tip of the spear in some of their sets, then you get him downhill, you get the defense moving. That opens up some of the catch and drives or catch and shoots for Tobias Harris. Now you can use PJ Tucker as a guy that can attack a closeout. And we saw last season in Miami, if there's a little bit of a tilt, like he does have a little bit of a floater, like he's very snappy in regards to driving, flowing into a handoff or just making the next pass and keeping things going. Like do that or do more of that rather. Like, I feel like that could be some of the low hanging fruit for them in the offense. Like, again, it's not Tyrese Maxey running 40 pick and rolls a game, but like use him if you're running Chicago, if you're running delay Chicago, whatever, let him come off the screen first. Let him puncture the defense and then go. And if your stuff doesn't work, we have James Harden that can just knock down step backs. Or we can go to the Harden and Embiid pick and roll, which defenses just don't have a good answer for at this point. And so like I would like to see more Maxey usage. To your point, like, yeah, the bench scoring just hasn't been there, period. Which is concerning.
The bench shooting hasn't been there, period. Not a single person outside of their top four, quote unquote, has taken more than 5 shots a game, average wise.
Yeah, like the theory of having that kind of top four is that, hey, we can keep 2 of them on the court at all times and like they can generate looks for the others. But if it's just, to your point, if it's just going to be, hey, we're just going to switch this, or he's going to stay home, then like, okay. Like I can talk myself into Daniel House as like a complimentary wing option if he's just getting a whole bunch of like wide open shots because the defenses are worried about the Harden plus Harris like hybrid bench units in the scrambling. If it's just, oh, we're just going to chill here and show some help, and then short close out, and now you just don't. It's an open shot instead of a wide open shot. And that's kind of different. And if you're just, again, you're using George Niang as a screener and that's just a switch, you're not throwing it to George Niang to to abuse a mismatch. And if it's just going to turn into hard and isolating, like that can still be good offense. Again, he's been very good to kick off the season. It's not criticism of Harden, but just from a, we want to generate advantages. We want to make defenses sweat. We want to get them in rotation standpoint. That's not really doing it, because as well as Harden's played, he's still not getting to the rim at peak Harden levels. And like, that's not a fair expectation, but like even like early Brooklyn Harden levels, like he's not there yet in terms of the burst. It's much better than it was last year, last postseason for sure. And just that bump has made him more dangerous offensively. And it also helps to your earlier point. Like, he's taking mid-range jumpers now. He's seeing drops. Like, all right, bet. I will get to my floater. I will get to my pull-up. I will get to a step back in the mid-range. As of right now, nearly 20% of his shots are coming between 10 and 16 feet. That is easily a career high. That is almost double the highest mark he's had in his career. I don't know if that holds, but like, his willingness to take that shot is a good thing, but it's also emblematic of the fact that, okay, he's taking a lot more of these because he ain't just getting to the rim at a snap anymore, which is fine, but like, you kind of have to gotta factor that in. And so I do want to see if they're able to get more juice out of the bench. What do those pick and roll pairings look like? And what is the spacing going to look like around that? Because there was a line of, I want to say end of the first quarter in that Spurs game where it was Harden alongside D'Antoni Melton. I think it was Daniel House, George Niang, and Montrezl Harrell. And it's like, okay, even if you want to run spread pick and roll with Harden and Harrell, I like D'Antoni Melton. Like, he can knock down shots. Do teams defend him like a guy that will bomb away 40% on high clip? No. They definitely don't do that with Daniel House. Like, George Niang is really the only one. And if you don't really have movements elements in your offense, aside from just your lift on a pick and roll, like, you can really configure, like, you can navigate that as a defense. And so just keep an eye on it. We'll see.
No, I mean, the rotation question is going to be interesting. Do you maybe hand the keys over instead of attaching Maxi to Embiid and maybe let it be Maxi and Harris during that stretch? Because you always know you can get Embiid going. Maybe that's where you get Maxi going and Tobias going. Maybe that helps reignite your bench because there's more people who could screen a roll type of deal. You kind of have to move the ball as opposed to, well, Joel's out here, let's run this. I don't know. A lot of different things. I think it's an easier fix than the optics are going to give it credit for. And I'm sure I'll be told I have a dot cape on again. But it is very clear it can go farther south than people anticipate. So that's going to be something to monitor how they respond to this start.
Absolutely. Who are the teams that are making you think after the opening week of games?
I only got one.
Ah.
Minnesota Timberwolves.
Ah, I see.
And it's only a continuation, just a thought. Because I watched the preseason game. We talked about it. The impact of teams just saying, hey, Rudy Gobert, we're just going to switch. I do think he's been more aggressive. I do think he's been more assertive, or at least attempted to. But that's an earlier thought bubble than I thought we would see. And then defensively, when I was watching them play Utah, I was like, couple more question marks on that end than I anticipated this early. And maybe that's on me. You know, maybe I just had high expectations for them as a group, respect for what they did. Here's where I'm at. And you let me know if I'm insane, right?
Okay.
So Minnesota avoided drop defense last year. I don't know if it was just a cat deal. I don't know if they just wanted to make sure the activity was up and make sure it was a little more simple, but they didn't do it. So they go out and get Rudy Gobert, who was elite at drop defense. No one's going to argue that. Having Rudy on your team and not playing drop would be like having you on a pod and having you just spew hot takes. Like, fine, but feels like a waste. But you now have to deal with the built-in looks that drop defense brings to the table, whether it's people flying off the ball, off staggers into pull-ups, or pick and roll into pull-ups, and you traded away a few of the defenders that would probably help with the screen navigation in that setup, and you also have Karl-Anthony Towns having to make decisions as a weak side defender more often than before, and you still have the Rudy Gobert making decisions as a weak side defender in space deal. And like, this is all before we get to the, what do they do with small lineups? Like, these are problems being presented by bases. Like, this was Kelly Olynyk and Lauri Markkanen making them kind of think about that. And so for me, it was just like, how many questions do I have with their base? It's fixable, but it's on my radar. And it's mainly because defense is really important to this Minnesota team. So I want to see how they tackle that going forward.
I guess just to spin a question off of you based on what you said, which I think, first and foremost, I think those are all valid concerns. And these are things that you brought up during our preview pod. So, like, this isn't a new conversation point for us. Again, this is very valid, your point. More specifically, I guess, where are you with Cat defensively, particularly in this setup to where now you're going to be toggling between schemes in the same possession sometimes? with Gobert starting alongside him? Like, what is your faith level with him?
I think he's definitely a do your job type of guy, in my opinion. I think it's going to be growing pains when you're on the weak side for him. And that's just naturally any big. Like, that's why you run the actions you run. That's why you space them out, because they're not used to necessarily showing help and recovering and closing out and flying around like that.
Yeah.
Or the nuance and the timing. Now, Minnesota is pretty good about showing early help. So I think he'll get the base down as far as I'm here. I get back out there. We're good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's going to take a beat.
Okay.
And it doubles if he actually has to guard someone, you know?
Yeah, that gets a little bit dicey. I remember, what was it, end of the preseason when the fact that we had a viral preseason clip is hilarious. But it was a clip about Cat defensively. And it's just like, man, surely we're not doing this already. Like, we can't be here already.
Now, I will give Rudy his credit, though. And I will give Minnesota some of their credit against the Thunder. If Karl Anthony Towns has a matchup and they double, Rudy's ceiling. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big deal. Not just for him to do it, but for them to look at it and to punish teams. Try and just take that off the menu. Try and make it be something where, hey, we're going to go to this if you want to do this. So I think the more aggressive he can be in those seals, the better off. And I think sneakily, his best pick and roll partner, whether you like it or not, it's going to be D'Angelo Russell. Those two are going to help each other. Because D'Angelo at a base is probably the person that's going to open up his roles. And that's what you need. You need Rudy to go ahead and give you that. But if he's going to keep running in transition, he's going to keep sealing early and looking for the ball. That's a good step for him. So this isn't a Rudy Gobert is bad type deal. It's a, they need to figure that out.
I got you. And man, we've been doing this pod for a long time, man. Because my next question for you is going to be like, how have you felt about D'Angelo Russell's usage so far to kick off this season? As I was posting, like, again, on Sunday, just kind of end up doing multiple teams. Like, okay, this is what the touch distribution looks like. Did Philly, looked at Atlanta, looked at Minnesota. It's like, wait a minute. D'Angelo Russell is way up here. And I wonder how much of that is him trying to establish himself as a threat. And then secondary thought bubble, hashtag respectfully messy, like, hey, this is a contract year. He didn't get an extension. Like, what does that mean? How much of that is him establishing himself? Because, hey, as you've talked about, as I've talked about, as Wool Beat writers have talked about, the Russell Gobert pick and roll pairing is going to be very important for this team. And he is the more natural partner with Gobert. So how much of it is that just he just has to dictate more there? Like, how have you felt about how he's been used so far?
I like it. I mean, ball in his hands. I think part of it might be just to get Gobert more comfortable, more than anything. And, you know, he's an aggressive player. So I think with the partners they have, it just kind of blends that way to me would be just my thing. That's probably something that will iron itself out. I also secretly have loved that they have Rudy screen for Kat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, usually big actions can sometimes just be, hey, we're going to switch this. What are you doing? But every now and then you kind of get like the Boogie Anthony Davis effect.
Yeah.
Where it just kind of works because it's like, wait, do we really want to do this? Do I really want him guarding Karl Anthony Towns? Oh, wait, Rudy Gobert's at the rim.
Yeah, and like that's something that, again, I just love what Chris Finch does offensively from a design perspective. But like beyond that, I think that's your early counter to, hey, we're just going to stash a wing on Rudy Gobert because he can't punish this mismatch. And now if you want to run a pick and roll with Russell or Anthony Edwards, we're going to switch it and we're good. If you just start running some 4-5 pick and roll all of a sudden, it's like, wait, are we putting a wing on Karl Anthony Towns? Which it's also fair to question that based on what we saw in the first round last year. They put Dylan Brooks and Desmond Bane on him, and there were some reps that were not very favorable to Mr. Towns. But in theory, like, I do like juicing that and being like, hey, you can put this smaller guy on Cat. If this is the game you're going with, you're now going to have to deal with Cat too. So, like, I like that wrinkle. And even off the ball, like running some action up top for Cat, and then he's flaring out and you have Rudy setting the pin in for him. Like, I like seeing Rudy setting off ball screens. Like, that just feels like an element of Minnesota's offense they didn't really have last year, to have like active and consistent off ball screeners rather than set actions or just in the flow. Like, there's a drive happening. This guy from the corner is dropping down to help on the roll. Let me just set this pin in real quick. Like, Rudy's going to inject some of that. And I don't think they had much of that last year. So I'm intrigued.
Live breaking, we are watching. It's a Monday. I just looked up at Sixers Pacers. They ran elbow action and a stagger for James Harden. He cut back door for a dunk. So we need to retape the Sixers segment.
Well, there we go. This is why the Sixers made us think. This is why I made the made the note at the top, like, hey, the games ain't started yet. Like, at this point, it's 7:14 Eastern. So, like, their early slate has started. But, yeah, we're going to keep an eye on Philadelphia. Let's get into some players that have caught our eye. Steve, who's caught your eye? Who showed out for you early?
Let's take a look. Well, John Morant.
Oh, yeah.
John Morant, watching him attack drop defense is just starting to break my brain. Like, he's just so quick and changes his speed so well. He eats up the space. And then he's also already at the big when he comes off. And you know what's even wilder? He's all making a dribble move on arrival. So your contain has like 0.7 seconds before you figure it out and he's by you. So you got to salute him for that. Nikias, do you know who the first player in Dallas Mavericks history is to score 25 points in each of his first two games is?
Would that be Christian Wood?
Christian Wood.
How about it?
I just think him averaging 25 in 25 minutes is hilarious.
That sounds about right. That's a Christian Wood stat if we've ever seen it.
Pretty much. De'Aaron Fox. Hey, man, I know it's early, but 31-7-5, 60% on 21 field goal attempts, 45% from the three. I'm intrigued. He appears to want to be back in the conversation, or at least, you know, be playoff adjacent. Nick Claxton for me.
I like the Nick Claxton shout.
He's working on the glass. So he's working defensively. His short roll decision making has improved, and it feels like he's trying to drive a lot.
Thank you. Like, I'm kind of here. Like, he had to go into the Pelicans game in the opener, which the Pelicans just waxed him in the second half of that game. But watching Nick Claxton, like, attack off the bounce from the slot, it's like, wait, this is cool. And, like, he flashed some ball skills at Georgia during his college days. Like, you knew he had some passing chops. He had a little bit of a handle, but like, to see that flash on the NBA level, it's like, okay, that's interesting. So keep an eye on that. Like, maybe you get down the line, you get some of like the Jackson Hayes effect from last year, to where like he's spaced and it's like, well, we don't care about him. He can't shoot, but he just chews up so much space quickly if he's able to attack. Like, well, I just want to keep an eye on that. Good call for you on Nick Claxton. Did you have more?
I had Trey Murphy the third. It's time.
Of course.
It's time. The three-point shooting. I mean, come on. It's time. He's shooting away like 60% three games on five attempts. Let's go.
He's
very good. And Brandon Ingram. Man's just looked incredibly smooth and in control at the start of the season. Quick decisions. Nothing looks forced. Gets where he wants to go. And if teams start putting two on the ball, look out. That's who I had.
Okay. For me, I think you start with Giannis, because how do you not start with Giannis? He has been absolutely insane to kick off the season. He's made his mark defensively. Like, we know how great of a defender Giannis is when he's locked in. For him to set the tone the way he did in the Sixers game and to follow that up with just the easiest 44 and 12 against Houston, it's just like, oh, you just need casual reminders of how good he is sometimes. Can fly around defensively, can grab and go. The passing continues to improve. He's making decisions quicker. The placement's getting better. You know what he does as a driver and as a post threat. As you've alluded to many of the times on this podcast, like, hey, he just quietly keeps getting more comfortable taking pull-up jumpers inside the arc. Like, he doesn't mind jabbing, going right up. He doesn't mind going to a one or two dribble pull-up. He's just getting more and more skilled as he continues to just dominate teams physically. It is insane. Want to give him the shout. Donovan Mitchell, who has fit like a glove in Cleveland. The pick and roll chops have been there because, of course, they've been there. The shots are falling. He's getting downhill. The passing reads have been fun for him. Quiet as kept. And something that I will proudly say as someone who has criticized Donovan Mitchell quite often on his end, Donovan Mitchell has looked pretty darn good defensively to kick off the season. We will see if it lasts as the sample grows. I have been very impressed by the buy-in, the level of communication that he's had, using the long wingspan to deal with bigger players when matched up against them, the off-ball communication. Like, he's doing what he's supposed to do defensively. If he keeps that up, stock is up for me with Donovan Mitchell. I love seeing that kind of growth. Again, it's early, so we'll see how it goes as the sample rises, but he deserves his shout for that for sure. Pascal Siakam, who just continues to be insane as a half court scorer, navigating tight quarters, the spin, the footwork, the touch around the basket, getting to the free throw line, the playmaking, the switchability defensively. He's just really freaking good, and he deserves his flowers. Tyrese Haliburton. Because what is a Dunker Spot podcast without me shouting out Tyrese Haliburton? But in all seriousness, watching him, the show was his. The pull-up jumper has been there for him. The playmaking has been there. I still would like to see more paint touches from him. We'll still see him get downhill with a little bit more juice. But he's bombing away right now. The pull-up shooting has been there. The finishing has been fine. The passing has been loads of fun. Want to give him a shout. And I will close this out. Mason Plumlee. Very quietly putting in some work in Charlotte. I've enjoyed the early season scheme versatility from him. The playmaking has absolutely been there for him, using him to ball the break, handoff guy, post guy as well. Shouts to Mason Plumlee. Think he's played well to kick off the season. You seem surprised.
Yeah, that's got me thinking, just like the players that made me think as well. Man gave us Donovan Mitchell defense praise and Mason Plumlee praise in the same pod. Where are you going next? What else you got?
Well, I guess the players that made us think, we can knock a few of those out before we get into the free throws and close things out. I start with Zion Williamson as he is working his way back with New Orleans. And so obviously obvious grace period there as he's working his way back. He's once again been hurt, so we'll see where he's at from a health perspective. But like the offense has already been fun. The finishing isn't quite there yet to the level we saw in his last full or partial season. But like you see the flashes to where he's coming off a handoff. He's just jumping into someone's chest and it's like, oh, this is just an absolute monster. And even if he misses, and again, I think that just corrects itself as the season goes on. He gets more in the flow. He has had some weird misses at the rim to kick off the season. Not a big concern area. But even when he does miss, the second jump is so quick. He's just such a powerful leaper, powerful finisher, and the touch is insane. So, like, just keep an eye on that. And more so, more than anything, just keep an eye on him defensively as well. Like, I was asked earlier today by a friend of the program, PD Webb, like, how have I felt about Zion's closeout? So I'm going to flip that question to you as well. But I was like, the closeouts feel different than what we saw, like, in the 2020-21 season from him, to where he's just either super late or it's just very sloppy and it's an easy blow by. It feels like his closeouts have been more contained, but they've also been a little slower. So like catch and shoot opportunities are kind of there. I don't know if that's just him trying to figure out how to contain his body. I don't know if that's been some kind of like coaching emphasis. Like, hey, if you're going to give up something, give up a semi-contested three instead of giving up some of the drives that you were giving up earlier in your career and putting us in a scramble mode. So I'm just going to keep an eye on that as the season goes by. Before I move to my next player, how have you felt about Zion defensively, I guess, overall?
I mean, he's about where I thought he would be. We mentioned it in the previews. It's going to take some time. This has always been an issue for him of sorts, learning how to help, how to recover, especially now there's more guys that he's going to have to face. They're going to be spaced. So he's going to have to learn how to time his help out, how to get back out. It's just a footwork deal, just like it was pre-injury, as far as making sure that he's able to recover, not just relying on his athleticism, because he's got a little bit of the timing down, but it doesn't help if you're not containing the penetration.
Yeah.
And so I think once he gets the timing down, once he understands how to just keep that drive in front, things are going to look a lot better for him. So it's about what I expected. It's going to take some time for him there.
Okay, got you. Next player. Ben Simmons, very high, not sounding the alarms, but I am raising the brow. 2 free throw attempts, 8 shot attempts through 2 games. That's not what you want to see. Did not have a lot of fun defending Zion in the season opener. But like overall, like I'm not super worried about defensive versatility. I do think he's going to help. Offensively, you've already seen what his playmaking can do when he's used. I am kind of keeping an eye on what his actual usage is, because in the preseason, like, all right, this is cool. Primary ball handler, they're running him off ball. Use them as like a handoff guy. That's cool, funky, creative. That's fun. Early on, I will see. We're going to keep an eye on what Ben Simmons is going to, what his usage is going to look like. Chris Paul, why? Steve is shocked. Again, have the brow raised. Talked about this during the preseason when we talked about the 36ers game, where it's like, oh, they're generating switches and going after Chris Paul early. The Suns Mavericks game that the Suns end up winning, they went after Chris Paul early. So I just want to see, like, what is he going to look like defensively? how often is he pressing the aggression button offensively? Just keeping an eye on Chris Paul. Don't think he's been bad overall this season or anything like that, but I am eyeing like how teams are treating him and what kind of looks he's going to get offensively. Because again, one of the worries that I had was, hey, are they going to look at the Dallas blueprint? Be like, okay, cool. Early help at the elbow so he doesn't get the snake into those jumpers and then just switch otherwise and down to beat guys off the bounce. If that becomes wholesale, like Phoenix's ceiling just lowers. If that just becomes D coverage versus this is what Dallas did well. So just keeping an eye on that and then also just how often teams are going after him. Last player I had was Patrick Williams in Chicago. 1-2 start. They're trying to work Zach LaVine back in. It's very early. We'll see. But like, he is an important piece for them on both ends of the floor. Like, I think he gives them a level of, or he should be giving them a level of closeout attacking. We talked about him during his rookie season with some of the pull-up mid-range shooting, some of the compliments there, what he can do as a cutter. And then defensively, a guy that should be able to defend bigger wings. I haven't had as many questions defensively as I have offensively. It doesn't feel like he just doesn't feel assertive enough. I don't think Chicago is really scheming up anything for him, which with the talent that they have, like I understand not doing that. But like, if you're not going to have schemed up for you, I would like to see him a little bit more active in the half court. Like, get some cuts in, set some off-ball screens, crash the glass if necessary. It just feels like he's kind of floating and they don't really need that, especially in light of some of the injuries that they've had to deal with. You kind of want Patrick Williams taking a step. And if he's regressing in any kind of way, like that really lowers what Chicago can do this year in light of the health issues that they've had. So those are the players that I had. Did you have thoughts? And then who did you have on your list?
Do the Sacramento Kings know what Domantas Sabonis does?
Oh, we are here. We're back.
Do they?
I think they did for like a week after the trade.
Yeah, now they're treating him like he's expensive Alex Lynn. What's happening?
You're not here for pick and roll only, Domantas Sabonis?
No. Sabonis for me.
Sabonis.
I had to get one pun in. I had to assault comedy. Shout out to my man in Canada. Let's go.
That's a tremendous shot. Let's get to some free throws. I have free throws for you. You kick this.
Wow. The new way. Season must be cooking. What you got, man?
We here. Early thoughts on the Trey Young, DeJounte Murray pairing.
I like it a lot. I am still very high on it. I think DeJounte's shot making has been underrated in this deal. I think the staggering that they do makes sense. They have things that they do when both of them are in. And then it goes to Trae Young doing Trae Young things. Then they bring DeJounte back with John Collins, which also unlocks him. And now you get right back to it. So the staggering has been good. I've liked the pairing. I've liked some of the off-ball stuff from Trae Young. Still got to work on some of the screening to kind of blend it together when they use those actions together. But again, side-to-side action. You got two bigs screening and rolling. It just fits.
I like it. A two-parter for you. One, are you surprised that Bruno Fernando is starting at center over Alperen Şengün? And two, are you enjoying the Bruno Fernando minutes as much as I am?
We don't talk about Bruno. No, I couldn't resist. Am I surprised a little? I mean, for this team, you would imagine that, hey, Şengün, let's see what all you can do. Do all the stuff. Let's see if you can get better. So I'm a little surprised by it, especially when, you know, you want to compete and win because that's what all NBA teams are supposed to do in this regular season.
Indeed.
You also have an opportunity to compete and win while playing some of your younger talent and giving them a runway. It makes sense. I mean, Bruno's been good. He jumped off the page to me in the Atlanta game with his activity. But he also, like, if you're worried about Şengün as a roller, Bruno has to roll as well. And, like, I feel like sometimes I'm like, and then also, if Şengün's with the second unit, is he just posting up? Is that really maximizing him? I don't know.
Okay, I feel that. And so that sounds like a no to the second part of that question.
It's a meh.
Okay, not fair enough. Pascal Siakam or Anthony Davis?
Ooh, wow. Really trying to get me packed up by Canada. Pascal Siakam or Anthony Davis today?
Indeed.
Oh, Lord. Give me Pascal.
Okay.
He's been too good, man. Like, he's done so much and added so much to his game that he can now set back up for the spin move without even making you think about it. Like, he just hits you twice and then I'm spinning. He's very, very good at basketball. This may also be about where I'm at with Anthony Davis as well. Sorry, Cannon.
I see. Do the Wizards have you in the air yet, or are you staying down on the fake? 2-1 start for your Wizards.
Oh, no, I flew by as well.
Ah, I see.
I'm raising my hand up to coach. My bad.
All right. Fair enough. Who wins a game first, the Lakers or the Kings?
What was the first team?
I see. It's the other team in Los Angeles.
Oh, well.
Before you.
Well, do we have any schedules up? Do I have time to look at that? The Kings have
actually,
Memphis.
Actually, I have you.
Okay, what you got?
Okay, the Lakers have the Nuggets on Wednesday, the Wolves on Friday, and the Nuggets again on Sunday. And the Kings have the Grizzlies on Thursday and the Heat on Saturday. The second part of that question is going to be, do either of those teams win this week?
When is the Denver game at LA?
I'm trying to think. They're playing Denver Wednesday. I don't know if that's in Denver or in LA.
It looks like that one's at Denver.
Okay.
Miami, I feel like Miami always struggles at Sacramento. I could be wrong.
They do. You get a fast team against the Heat. It's kind of tough. So like that would be a sneaky good bet to make if you're going to go that route.
I'm probably leaning Kings just because of that, but also Lakers probably going to beat Denver on Sunday.
Okay.
Hashtag California love.
There we go. Why did Cody Martin do that?
Yes.
Do you believe in the Bucks defense conceptually, or rather their new emphasis on limiting three-pointers?
I believe in the Bucks defense. I would really, really appreciate it if we just let the Bucks defense exist. And please don't just talk about how much the Bucks are just taking away three-point line. Don't make that a point. Don't make that a thing, folks. Don't do it. Do not do it out there. Do not do it. Don't do it. Yes, I know they're not being wild and they're staying at home and it's great, but like, don't make that the thing they're hanging their hat on. Oh, look, they're doing such. If you could point out the concept, just point out the concept, how they're doing it, but don't just tell me they're doing it, because what happens when teams just make threes?
And folks, we have our first hashtag Big Mad of the 2022-23 season. We are
here. I already saw it. Like, oh, no, it's been a point of emphasis since training camp. They're really trying to, okay, what happens when they give a bunch of layups? Keep the same energy.
I don't know if they're doing that with Brooke Lopez in the lineup. That's another shout. That man's been incredible to start the year defensively.
Yeah, Brooke bike.
Brooke is bike indeed. Two-parter again. This is the Utah division here. Lauri Markkanen has been the blank best player in the NBA through the first week of the season.
I feel comfortable saying 25.
Okay. Secondarily, how upset is Danny Ainge right now?
I think he's kind of happy right now.
Okay.
Like, he's definitely in still got it mode.
Mm-hmm.
Still got it. Little chip on your shoulder. Sent a couple texts. They said I couldn't do it. They laughed at me. One of those times where you quote tweet an old take that came out right. Like, I feel like he's in that mode.
I feel it. All right. That's all I had. What do you have on the, what you got on the tally?
Well, I was going to be, are you surprised that I have fallen for both the Wizards and Blazers pump fake? But I already answered that I had, so never mind.
That's amazing.
Donovan Mitchell or Zach LaVine?
Well, if this is the Donovan Mitchell we're getting, like, that's being, but even then, like, Zach was really good. He was really good as they got blasted over the weekend.
It's okay for opinions to evolve. You can stick with LaVine. There's no problem. I just was curious.
Let me get a larger sample with LaVine this year. But like, Mitchell's showing me something.
Temperature check.
That's fair. LaVine for now, but like Mitchell's. But he, if my opinion evolves, he's earned that one.
That was a nugget for the longtime dunkers. who remember that 20-minute debate that we had?
Hey man,
a bigger concern for you: the Clippers offense or the Clippers defense?
Bigger concern would probably be the defense. I think the offense sorts itself out, honestly.
What's funnier, LeBron James averaging 9 three-point attempts a game, or Brooke Lopez averaging 9 three-point attempts a game?
is probably LeBron. And I will go back to a sentence that I stated. If LeBron is the best shooter in your lineup, the lineup is bad and you should feel bad. I feel like LeBron's had to take a lot of threes this year, which seems a little bit concerning.
If you're a Utah fan, who are you more upset with playing well, Bogey or Royce O'Neal?
Gosh, the bit would be Bogey to complete the lineup. We're not going to make that joke. Probably Royce.
Okay. Royce O'Neal's been playing very well. He's been fun to watch. Wouldn't be a free throws, not a power ranking. Power rank these bigs for me so far this season. Let me know when you're ready.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Let me pull up the notes app. All right.
Come on, you had the analysis coming.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Jusuf Nurkić, Zubac, Nick Claxton, Wendell Carter Jr., Jakob Poeltl.
Wait a minute. You started with Nurkić. That's going to kill me. All right, so Nurkić and who now?
Zubac, Nick Claxton, Wendell Carter Jr., Jakob Poeltl.
Claxton, Wendell, and then Poeltl?
Yep.
Oh, just hitting all of my faves in Nurkić. That's amazing. To kick off the season, I would probably say, okay, Nurkić 5. We can start there. I'll do the Steve Jones Jr. thing. We'll go Nurkić at 5. We will go Claxton 4, Wendell 3, Poeltl 2, Zubac 1.
Oh, okay. All right. Power rank these bigs. DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, Gorgui Dieng, Dwayne Dedman.
Let me So we got DJ, we have Jang, we have Drummond, we have Dedman, and who was the other one?
Blake Griffin.
Ah, I see. Well, we're gonna have Dedman last, I'll be honest. I'll say Dedman 5, Griffin 4, Jordan 3, Jang 2, Drummond 1.
All right, so some energy was left the same. You love to see it. Paul Pierce said that the Lakers team is built worse than redacted. What do we do with that?
It's high key problematic. It's lower key unnecessary. Also, wow. It is a weirdly constructed roster. But, like, Kendrick didn't deserve that straight. That ain't cool.
What needs to change for the Lakers?
Yes. Their team is the answer. But, like, God. They got to make a trade for some shooting. It doesn't necessarily have to be, like, the Buddy Hield deal or whatever. But, like, they got to get some more shooting in the building. Like, this is – it's untenable. Like, they're not going to miss as many wide open shots as they missed so far this year, but they also aren't going to make that much money with the personnel that they have. Like, they have to make some sort of deal. Also, time management would help with this group. They should have had their first win on Sunday.
Nope. Moving right along.
All righty.
What do you think they should do, the Lakers should do with Redacted if they're not going to trade him?
If they're not going to, this feels like a setup, but like, if they're not going to trade him, like, genuinely send him home.
The hashtag is big agenda. Yeah, Kendrick Perkins 3 days ago. If you can't trade Russell Westbrook right now, then I believe you should send him home. It's the last time I'm talking about that man for a little bit. How many more wins until Danny Ainge makes that call to California?
I'd say if the Jazz are sitting at like 8-4 or 8-5, I think they're like, okay, wait. Because now we're more than 10% of the way through. We got to wait. We got to do something. This is not the play-in year. we'll aim for like the 15-game mark, certainly. So we get 9-6 or 10-5 or somewhere in that range, the call is being made.
Okay, perfect. I'm all good. Mr. EBK, what a great episode.
Oh, brother, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. Leave us a review as well. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. If you have mailbag questions for us, send them in at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Get them in. Hang with us in Dunker Spot. Watch parties. partnered with Watch Playback. We're having a lot of fun. Analysis, banter, general foolishness in the comment section, bad food, etc. Posted in the comment section. Have some fun with us. And with that, we will catch y'all on Friday.
Dunker Nation, let's ride.